one for fun. This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
I'm a girl watcher, watching girls go by. My, my, my. I'm a girl watcher, I'm a girl watcher. Here comes one now. I was just a boy when I threw away my toys. I found a new pastime that went on. Whenever I detect members of the other sex, I play the game, I do so well. Oh, I'm a girl watcher, I'm a girl watcher, watching girls go by.
Oh yeah, a little bit of the Occasions. Remember that song, I'm a Girl Watcher? I do. Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, along with my buddy and partner, Big Ed Davis. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, the last day of February. We're not in leap year, my friends. The 28th is the last day. We are going to be talking in a few minutes with Sean Higgins of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And we're going to talk about the prospect of Democratic congressional staffers forming their own union. How would that be for irony? You know how Democrats are always supporting union members? Of course, they don't have to deal with unions, do they? Wouldn't that be interesting if lawmakers, especially Democrats, have to deal with unions? We're going to talk about that with Sean. And Donald Trump wows them at CPAC over in Orlando. So we'll talk with the proprietor of the barber pole, Andrew Ceraci, get his take on it a bit later in the show. Stay tuned for that. And guess what? Tomorrow night, get your popcorn, get your Cokes, Biden's State of the Union speech, finally, for the year. What is this? It's going to occur in March. What's he going to say? That itself will be the worth the price of admission. We are going to talk about that as well. And in our ultimate top 10, with all of the turmoil going on in the Ukraine, the top 10 world's strongest militaries, we list them for you. Stay tuned for that at the end of the show. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop. Guys, for the best haircut in Tampa Bay, you will find out that it's Andrew's Master Barbershop. When you just give them a call. Get over there, boys. 727-733-3773. They're in Dunedin in the Overcash Plaza. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580 Main Street. 727-733-3773. All right, well, the last time I looked, those gallant citizens of the Ukraine were holding off the Russians. Right now, Ukraine's second largest city is facing intense rocket fire. That's Kharkiv. Dozens of dead, hundreds of wounded. It's just absolutely deplorable what is going on. I saw this woman. She was in one of those basements of one of those buildings. She had a little child she was holding. She was the most eloquent spokesman for the Ukrainian people that there could have been. Ed, I don't know if you saw that woman. You seemed to, I don't know if you saw him. But anyway, it was heart-wrenching to listen to her talk. Her husband was out fighting, out on the front. And she and her little baby.
And she had the baby in one arm and gun in the other.
That might have been her.
Yeah.
She was so eloquent talking. She was emotional, of course, talking about how the people of the Ukraine will fight for their city.
And
and for their country.
I think it stems from their president, who refuses to leave. I mean, look what happened to Afghanistan. He couldn't cash his checks fast enough to get out of there.
Exactly.
And this guy says, I'm staying.
Guess what? Even Putin has abandoned Moscow. Did you know that? Putin is hiding.
Mm.
Putin. And they're not even fighting in Moscow. It's in the Ukraine. But you're right. This guy is an inspiration. Zelensky. He's an inspiration.
Yeah, I don't. This bothers me because I don't know how much... leniency he, you know, Putin has or on his own to do what he wants, you know.
You think he's being controlled, Putin?
I don't think he's being controlled. I think he should be controlled
by
some sort of a substance.
By chains, maybe.
But, you know, I'm just worried at the fact that he just, you know, says the heck with it and starts fighting. Not fair, you know, I'm talking about using nuclear weapons.
Bringing out the nukes.
And then where does he start firing those on?
Or, you know, another thing he could do is bring out chemical weapons, which
And what if he just says, listen, if I'm, you know, I'll just take out the whole planet. I don't know. Crazy. I mean, I would hope somebody inside that Moscow situation there would figure out this guy's nuts. But, I mean, I don't know what you can really do. It's not like here where you can go and impeach the guy 12 times and try to get him out, you know.
First of all, a lot of the Russians apparently are getting the real message.
Yeah, and then
the younger ones in particular.
Yeah, and you got a lot of protesting going on.
So therefore, there's a lot of protesting going on, and Putin must be feeling it. And the other thing is the actual. Competency right now of Putin. They've been talking about how there's been a change in him for the worse, that there might be something going on inside of him that is fostering a lot of what he's doing right now. So that's another scary thing.
I mean, can you imagine if somebody in his cabinet comes up to him and says, I want you to take a mental cognizant test?
This is the same one Donald
he's
Trump
scraping
took.
Ice off
the
runway.
But we've crossed out his answers. We want you to take it.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Speaking of that, Biden, you know, Putin is outside of Moscow, and Biden took off and went to Delaware. I think the timing and the PR that doesn't look too good when the president of the United States decides to go to Delaware, his home, when all of this is going on right now with NATO and the possibility of a much greater conflict, you would think he would have hung around the White House a little bit longer.
Well, where is the State of the Union speech going to be broadcast from?
From a bunker probably in Pennsylvania.
So this is not the one where it's in front of Congress and everything?
Oh, no, it is. Yes, it
is.
I'm just being funny. It's going to be... No, he'll be back tomorrow, or he'll be back probably back today. It'll be held a joint. It'll be held in the Capitol building. It's a joint session of Congress.
I'm saying, is this because of the situation that we have on a very unstable situation that maybe they don't want all of our leaders in the same place at the same time?
Oh, I didn't. Well, first of all, they do have a thing where at least one person is kept out of the State of the Union speech. But, no, I don't think any of that's really going on right now. Well, I think a lot of people won't show up.
Usually the president and the vice president are usually there, unless your top two dogs
in
the weeds.
Actually, now that you mention that, it might be the vice president that does not go to the State of the Union speech.
Mm.
Because remember, you've got all of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the Supreme Court. You've got the president all together in one room. I think it's the vice president. I have to check on that. Mm. I have to check on that. That's a good question. But where is he? Is he back in Washington now? I would hope so. But that's not good PR. Now, I understand he had some sort of a family situation. Well, we all have family situations.
Not another dog. Not another dog getting put in the doggy timeout things.
Oh, doggy timeout?
Yeah.
Do you think that would send him to Delaware?
Oh, Major. What was it? Major? Was it Major that caused all the problems?
Yeah,
they're biting everybody.
Yes, yeah. Why didn't he bite Biden a few times?
That dog just wanted the heck out of Washington. He wanted no part of that White House.
Smart dog. Okay, we're going to take our break. When we come back, can't wait to talk with Sean Higgins and these Democrats that are in Congress. Their staffers are starting to talk about unionizing. We'll talk more about it on the other side of the break.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Hey, Tantalk listeners, Senior Voice America is here. Learn what's affecting Bay Area seniors. From political to financial and health to wealth, it's right here every Monday afternoon at 4 o'clock. Your hosts, political commentator Tim Rice and financial expert Berkeley Badger, will bring current, thought-provoking subject material while taking your calls. Senior Voice America Radio, 42 years of service to mature adults and a proud member of the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on the last day of February, the 28th. Boy, there's a lot going on, is there not? We're delighted to have back Sean Higgins, who is a research associate at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and he has penned a piece for The Hill. You're the boss. Unionized staff would force Dems to take on management's role. And apparently, a group of congressional Democratic staffers are trying to form a union. How ironic, Sean. Wouldn't it be great to see these these members of Congress who purport to be big time, you know, behind labor, have to deal with contract negotiations and hours and work time and the whole bit?
It would definitely be novel, and the thrust of my piece is that definitely sort of amusement factor to it. It could also have something rather positive, which is so often lawmakers pass laws without really understanding what they're doing or how it affects or impacts people. This would be give them an opportunity to understand what it's actually like to be on one side of a contract negotiation, specifically the management side, and it might give them a broader perspective of what exactly they're doing with some of these laws.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? In that limited sense, a lot remains to be seen because we don't really know exactly how it would be done if it was done. But still, from the basic idea is that the lawmakers themselves would have to be the management side of the negotiations, and that's really interesting idea, actually.
Oh, I think terribly interesting. How did this all start?
Well, basically. You know, the Democrats have been very vocally pro-union for, you know, going on about two decades or so now, always talking about how workers should be involved in this. And it was only a matter of time before this starts to trickle down to the level of, you know, the sort of the grunts who do a lot of the work in these things, from whether it's the think tanks or the campaigns or the Hill staffers, to say, well, if unions are so great, then why shouldn't we have them too? And that's essentially what happened. It first started off with some of the nonprofit organizations and the staff, some of those starting to organize. And then in the last election, we saw people starting with Bernie Sanders' staff saying, well, we should have a union. And this prompted a sort of domino-like cascade where all the other candidates were basically said, yeah, we think this is a good idea, even whether or not they really did or didn't, because they didn't want to be, you know, make a sort of anti-union statement in the middle of a campaign.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Well, no. I mean, the interesting thing about this is campaigns, by definition, are temporary, and the unions really only work in a permanent workplace. So it was kind of a gimme for them because there's no possible. By the time anybody would like get around to actually hammering out a contract, the campaign would probably be over. But a political staff on Capitol Hill, those are around for a while. So this is a case where it's much more feasible to actually have a union.
Yeah. Now, right now. A staffer for a member of Congress, does he or she just negotiate with the member of Congress, or is there some sort of locked-in, salary and benefits that everybody gets, you know, from Bernie Sanders all the way to, some conservative?
They're allotted the individual members of Congress are allotted budgets for staff, and it varies. Particularly, you get a much bigger budget if you're if you have a, like a chairmanship position or something like that, which is one of the reasons why they're so coveted. But to a large extent, my understanding is basically, yeah, the lawmaker or their chief of staff.
Yeah, they work it out.
The stuff for them, work it out with them. And this would create a different scenario where obviously they'd have to have a you know, longer-term contract. Now, whether that would be for individual lawmakers or whether it would be all, you know, Congress as a whole, all staffers would belong to one particular union, or if it would be you know, staffers for you know, the Democratic Party would belong to one particular union, and maybe or maybe not,
yeah.
Republicans would belong to one. Because that's another question, because obviously you'd have, you then have a large proportion of staffers who may not necessarily want to be in the union, and that could be very problematic for the ones who do. So there's a lot of sort of real practical real-world consequences to doing this that will be very interesting to see it play out in Congress.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're talking with Sean Higgins from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He's written something about the chance that staffs, congressional staffers might create a union for themselves. And it is kind of complicated. Let me ask you this, Sean. Overall, what is the average number of, I guess you would call them, staffers that, that say, a member of Congress has? I know that it varies based on, obviously, all kinds of things. But let's say you have, let's say you're on a couple of committees and you're a congressman. How normally, how many staffers are working for you?
A little bit less than a dozen, I think, if you're just a generic sort of member of Congress, and but it can vary a bit. I will say this, and I know this as a former congressional reporter myself, a lot of these people are seriously overworked and underpaid.
Oh, I bet.
For a, I mean, it basically is almost a 24/7 job for some people, and you are expected to basically work, you know, almost around the clock in certain circumstances. It's just sort of understood. And people tend to put up with it because it's a sort of a resume burnishing thing for a congressman for a few years, and then you move on to something else.
I mean, there's 535 total, you know, congresspeople, 100 in the Senate, 435 in the House. So let's say you got 500-plus congresspeople, and they each have about 10 staffers. You're talking about 5,000 people that might that might unionize, right?
Theoretically, it could be that high. Yeah.
Wow, that's quite a few. Now, the trick is to try. If you were, you know, thinking of doing that, you were a staffer, you'd probably have to sneak out somewhere with a bunch of other staffers and say, "Look, I don't want my boss to know what I'm doing right now, but I think we ought to organize." I mean, if the boss found out, they might fire him.
Well, that's assuming, though, that it's coming from the ground up with the staff. And one of the other things is, it doesn't union organizing doesn't necessarily work doesn't always work that way. And this is sort of the Norma Ray type. But a lot of times, outside unions come in and essentially lean on management to say, "Why don't you give us a contract to represent the workers for you?" And that's how it sort of happens. And that's one of the once it becomes possible that. You know, the congressional staff would organize, and you'll start seeing a lot of unions basically approaching Capitol Hill and saying, "Well, why don't you give us the contract to represent them?" And working it in because the way union law works, it's basically a contract between the union and management, and a pre-existing union can essentially go in and strike up a deal with management. Without necessarily having complete support or even majority support among the workers, if management is amenable to the idea, because in theory it's the management basically saying hiring this entity to sort of help it manage the relations with its workers. I'm overgeneralizing, but that's basically how the law works.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't necessarily come from the ground up, which is one of the sort of the issues that we might see.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. So what are the chances that these staffers will unionize? What do you think?
I would put it below 50%. I mean, it's not impossible that it could happen, and stranger things have happened in recent years. But I think the bottom line is a lot of lawmakers, even progressive Democrat ones, don't really want it because when you push comes to shove, nobody in management wants to give up power, control, authority.
Right.
The potential downside of, what if the staff, decides to go on strike or something like that, will they have, or will they insist on like a no strike clause in the contract, which is common in a lot of government unions? And it gets very complicated and very tricky and very ugly and potentially ugly. And I think a lot of them will want to avoid that. So they may rhetorically say we favor it, but they're not going to jump to do it, and they'll kind of try and quietly push it aside and hope it doesn't happen. Though they may hope that the Republicans will in a sense bail them out by making it possible for them to have a union.
Right.
So you see this situation happen sometimes on Capitol Hill where they'll be in favor of a tax hike, but then not actually want the tax hike to pass. And then suddenly, if they get majority control of Congress, they're like, oh well, now you have to do the thing you said you wanted for, and the Republicans are preventing you from doing it. It's like, well, can't the Republicans come back and prevent us from doing it again?
Now, I wonder if you could use this, if you were a Republican, as sort of a weapon. In other words, hey, look at those progressives over there, always claiming to be for the little guy. Find out whether or not they would want their staffers to join a union. You know, in other words, use it as a hatchet. I wonder if that might occur once, this becomes, more, more media might focus. Do you think the media will focus on this, by the way, at all?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no greater dog bites man story than, a candidate, lawmaker who's supposedly espouses X views, and privately does something contrary.
Exactly right. Yeah.
And, I mean, I've covered stories in the past about, hardcore liberal activist groups like Media Matters, for example, was a good one. About a decade or so ago, their staff attempted to unionize, and the management very quietly attempted to scotch this. They hired a management side law firm that was specialized in preventing staff from unionizing, and tried to do it. And the union was very happy to talk to pretty much anybody and everybody.
I'll bet they were.
Who would get out the story about, hey, Media Matters is trying to break a union. And that's the type of situation one of the things that I think the Democrats are trying to very quietly to avoid.
Yeah. Not in my backyard. Somewhere else, but not here. Yeah, I mean, so I would love to see AOC and Bernie Sanders and Tlaib and all of those others. I'd like to hear what they say about it. And whether or not maybe, I mean, could some, theoretically, I guess some Congress people could say, "Look, we're gonna have a little union group here," or I don't know, they're gonna join the AFL-CIO, or I mean, that would be another thing. They might join an existing union, right?
Yes, they could join an existing one. They could join a federation. I mean, in theory, there's no reason why they couldn't be a member of the AFL-CIO if they were to organize. Interestingly, even these sort of large labor federations also have to deal with unionizing staff because, the AFL-CIO, some of the other big ones like the Service Employees International Union, the staffs that work for them on Capitol Hill are unionized.
Isn't that funny?
The unions have to work as management to deal with their staff. So that also creates these occasional situations where they're like, where the unions will say, well, the union for our staff is being unreasonable in their demands, and we have to oppose them. And so, yeah, you have these.
Oh, wouldn't that be something? It's really ironic, I guess. But I think this is such an interesting story. I hope that, because I hadn't, other than finding out from you and CEI, I didn't know about this. I hope that it will get more play. Right now, things are so, there's so much going on. But maybe a little bit later in the year, do you think it's going to become a bigger issue?
It might. I mean, once Vladimir Putin decides that doing a James Bond villain impersonation.
Oh, God, yeah.
People will be free to focus on other interesting things. So at the moment, this is kind of getting swallowed up in the news, understandably.
Understandably.
But it's not something that, as long as the possibility exists that it could happen, I think it will still sort of percolate around there. And now, frankly, that we've had, lawmakers say, well, I'm fully in favor of unionizing my campaign staff or even my Capitol Hill staff, and we've had Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi on record saying that, it will probably linger around for a while if it doesn't actually happen.
I would think you're right. Sean, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so very much.
Always a pleasure to be on.
All right, sir. Well, I know we'll be talking again soon. Sean Higgins, Competitive Enterprise Institute. All right. Going to take our break. When we come back, Donald Trump. Hey, you got him going at the CPAC meeting over the weekend. We're going to talk with the proprietor of the barber pole, Andrew Ceresi, to get his take on it and whether or not the Donald is getting closer to becoming a presidential candidate once again.
Only the lonely.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Tune in to the King and the Cop Show, Mondays, Thursdays, Fridays, 2 to 4 p.m.
I'm the King, Jim Leyland.
I'm the cop, Tommy Sedner.
We had to beat the bad guy. We had to win. Man, there was nothing better.
And I'm the host, Mike Straka.
Who's this sweet-talking guy right here?
What are they talking about?
The King and the Cop with Mike Straka.
Tune in to the King and the Cop Show, Mondays, Thursdays, Fridays, 2 to 4 p.m. on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Uno, dos, one, two, tres, cuatro.
Hey, we are back for the second portion of Freedom Work. Delighted to have back both of the brothers Ceresi, Andrew and Angelo Ceresi. And I'll tell you what, there's so much going on right now. By the way, apparently talks between Russia and the Ukraine are underway. That is a very good sign. Let's keep our fingers crossed there. In the meantime, I see that the stock market is down about 400 plus points right now. That is not surprising at all. Meantime, Donald Trump easily won the straw poll at the CPAC, the Congressional the Conservative PAC that was taking place in Orlando over the weekend. I think he got something like 59% of the ballots cast. I'm not too surprised, Andrew. I suspect that that was not a shock, that he would get almost 60% of the votes for president.
No, Paul, I know. I watched the whole speech. I couldn't believe the guy went 2 hours.
He did?
It was close to 2 hours he was talking, man. Unbelievable.
Can you imagine Biden talking for 2 hours?
He can't talk 3 seconds. But, you know, I saw those straw poll results, and I saw Ron DeSantis at 28%.
He was second.
Everybody else only got 1% and 2%.
Exactly. Those are the only two fish in the sea as far as conservatives are concerned.
Now, I know the family very well, and I watched Ron's speech, and I did watch Donald Trump's speech, both of them. And I noticed that either one of them didn't mention the other one.
Yeah.
Through the whole thing. Now, I said this last night. When I was talking with Ron Sr., I said, we don't know what's going on, but I think there's something. But I'm going to tell you this right now. If Ron tried to run against Trump, Trump will make hamburger out of him.
You
ever watch the safari movies with the lions, okay?
Yes.
And you got the big lion that's been in charge of the brood for a long time, and then here comes the one with a little bit of fur around his head, thinking he's going to move into that Tory and become the big man. And what happens to that little lion? Okay.
Yep.
I see the same thing here.
Okay, so let me...
Ron is not ready, even close, to go against Trump. Trump will destroy him.
Now, you mentioned something very interesting. I'm going to bring Angelo in here on this in a moment. But you mentioned that neither one brought it up. So is there a mutual agreement here, do you think? Let's not even bring each other's names up. Or, I mean, what does that mean to you? Does it mean that there is a little bit of tension going on between the two of them?
Well, you know, Ron, or Paul, talking to Ron, there is none.
You're talking about talking to the father of
right.
Ron.
There DeSantis, is yes. no tension going on, supposedly, but he even said the same thing. Maybe we don't know.
Does,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The father don't know everything.
Well, I wouldn't know if I was one of them, if I was wrong, I wouldn't know whether or not I was going to run for president in 24. This is 22. And I would think I would give myself at least this year, and you got to start figuring on it early 23. I would say very early 23. So I think he can legitimately say, look, I'm not interested. I'm running this state of Florida. Right. We got too much going on here, and be absolutely accurate.
Right, but I'm being surprised that being in the state of Florida in Orlando, that he wasn't brought up as the great governor doing a hell of a job.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I know that we're talking Florida politics right now to some, not Florida politics, but talking about Florida politicians, Angelo. Did you watch any of that CPAC?
I don't have, I saw vignettes of it on Facebook. We don't have, I don't have Newsmax up here in upstate New York.
Mm-hmm. Do you have TV up there?
We have, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we have TV.
Yeah, you still have radio there, right?
No, not yet.
Well, you know, Rochester's always slow in coming in with technology. But anyway, so you watched a little bit of it, Newsmax, and of course, Newsmax, which is one of the up and coming conservative news channels, was it very pro Trump? I mean, did you see or feel that it was?
Well, I was watching vignettes of it on Facebook. You know, I was streaming it here on Facebook, and. I think, you know, he's got the backing of the Republican Party. He's got like 59% on that straw
right.
poll, and you got DeSantis that came in second. I would venture to guess, you know, being involved in politics myself up here in Rochester, New York, that the ticket will be Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis.
The ticket?
And I think Ron DeSantis knows, you know. The guy's an educated person. He's in politics. He's a politician himself. He knows that the party wants Donald Trump again, and I don't think he would ever go against that. He's a team player. He's doing great with Florida, and I think he wants to be part of the team. Let's face it.
Yeah.
Donald Trump's got the backing right now. I mean, and if it continues like that, why would any other Republican want to go against him? To be honest with you, unless it's just for window dressing, that's it.
Did I hear you say that you thought if the ticket would be Trump DeSantis? Is that what you said?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be.
Very interesting. Andrew, do you agree with that? Do you think that DeSantis would settle for being vice president in 24?
You know, Ron, or Paul, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that Trump will run in 2024. And he'll pick a different vice president while Ron finishes out his term in Florida, and then Ron will run in 2028 if things keep going the path they're going.
Why do you think there isn't anybody else that's even close? Why is it just those two?
Because Donald Trump is an intelligent businessman. This is where I differ about Ron being a president. Ron is an attorney. Donald is a businessman. I don't know many attorneys that know how to run businesses. Period. Okay, they run the laws, they know the laws, and they know how to twist the laws. But as far as running a big business, and this country is nothing but big business, okay, there's nothing small business about it at all. And you've got to have that person that knows the business. And I think by 2028, Ron could learn from Trump a lot about how business is run, and that's what he needs to learn.
Don't you think that by being the governor, when did Ron become the governor? 2 years ago, is it? I can't even remember. Anyway,
years ago.
Yeah. That being the governor of a state has usually been the best springboard for being prepared for the presidency. If you look back, look at Reagan and some of the others that came from being governors to becoming presidents instead of, say, coming from Congress as an example.
Oh, I agree. I agree. And like I said, I think for between now and 2028, it'll be a good education for him for business.
Yeah.
And you need to learn business before you're president of this country. You can't be an attorney knowing the laws. you need to know.
Have a business background, yeah.
Big business.
So Angelo, did you say you got to hear portions of the speech, or did you just read about it?
No, it was some of the speech was on. Then we were reading. Then you read on it.
Okay, because I have a question for you about Donald Trump's attitude towards the Ukrainian crisis. Do you feel that Donald Trump has been, outraged enough at Putin?
Oh, he, absolutely. I mean, what he's saying, you know, and what people are doing, some of them are taking it out of context. What he's saying is that the guy was savvy about waiting his time, doing what he did. You know, knowing that with Afghanistan, the fall of Afghanistan with the United States, you know what I'm saying? All that stuff involved Putin's decision, you know, knowing that the United States is weak with the wokeness in the United States, all the turmoil we have had in the United States. He figured he'd wait and make his move. That's all Trump was saying, is Trump saw through him and knows how he is.
But my question is, do you think that he has thrown enough slings and arrows at Putin?
Has he thrown enough?
Yeah.
I would say so.
You would. Andrew, I have the same question to you, because I get the impression that Trump has been pulling his punches on Putin. I must tell you that. I don't. There's something about the way he's been responding.
You don't think he's
to this crisis?
You don't think he's being more aggressive on him?
I think he could be more aggressive. Andrew, do you know what I mean?
Go ahead. As far as Trump being more aggressive?
Yeah, with his words about his outrage.
I mean, you know, how much can the guy do? Because he's not president. I think he hammered him plenty, but I think even more he hammered Biden is the one who should have been handled.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I mean. He's hammering Biden more. And I think that Biden deserves some hammering, and the Republicans will certainly make sure they do it. But right now, don't you think maybe we should all be hammering Putin more than Biden? I mean, it's sort of a come-together moment, isn't it, when we've got a war going on?
Paul, there is no coming together with this guy. You can hang that up.
Really?
It ain't happening. Yeah. When Trump said that Putin was a genius, he compared him to Biden. You got the moron at one end of the spectrum and the genius at the other end. Okay? Every move that Putin made was genius against Biden.
Okay.
And that's exactly what he meant.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, why should he's hammering Putin enough, but he needs to go after Biden to open up to people's eyes how stupid this guy is.
You know,
and his administration.
Yeah, go ahead, Angelo.
You know, I'm surprised, Paul, that you can't take that nobody's taking this guy out. I mean, if you can get rid of Soleimani, you can get rid of Osama bin Laden, why can't we or any country with the intelligence that we have can't take this guy out? I mean, this guy needs a bullet in the head.
I think a lot of people...
Dangerous.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of people are thinking that. He has retreated to some isolated spot outside of Moscow, by the way.
I'm sure he has. Because, I mean, if you could take out Osama bin Laden, that guy retreated in the areas and they somehow found to take him out.
No, he did.
And they got to take... They have to take this guy out. Whether it's his people or even NATO without, you know, saying, hey, we're taking him out. You know, somehow sneak into Russia and put a bullet in this guy's head. He is dangerous.
I think a lot of people feel that way. I think that's the first reaction a lot of us have. And maybe somebody close to him should do it. But think about it. If that were to occur, what follows, you know? It's sometimes from the frying pan into the fire. But
yeah, but you know what, Paul? This guy, we know he's dangerous.
Yes, I mean, we do.
He's the one that mentioned nuclear war. Let's face it.
You know, Andrew?
Nobody in their right mind.
Yeah, I think you're
even
right.
Even gesturing about it. Paul, talk about that.
I want to ask Andrew this. There is talk of hauling, however they could get to him, hauling Putin before a world like that court, you know, in the Hague.
The Nuremberg trials.
Yeah, the world court in the Hague for what he is doing. You know, it's almost like the Holocaust.
Right, the crimes against humanity.
Crimes against humanity. I wonder if that may occur. Go ahead.
Paul.
Yeah.
If you watched Trump's speech the other night, he did say one thing that was very important, that you could get anybody you want. When he took out Soleimani, okay, the person that came up after Soleimani, he had him on the phone. Trump was talking to this
person. Right.
And he told him, do not try anything to any Americans, because if you do, I'm going to tell you where you're sitting right now.
Yes. I'm sure he did. I'm sure he would sit up straight and listen, yeah?
Trump would take care of this problem, Paul.
Yeah.
But he had no fear of taking somebody out.
Yeah.
So many other people backed it.
Well, it's a very interesting scenario. I don't know what Trump would have done. I feel that if Trump had been reelected, I'm not sure that we would have even had this situation in the Ukraine.
No, you wouldn't have even had it, Paul. He would have had none of this crap. But because you got a weak little jackass in the presidential office, this is what happens.
It's not just Biden. It's the Ocasio-Cortez's, the Tlaib.
The administration.
And his administration, the Democrats, from Pelosi and Schumer, and who's that other guy? The guy with his pants up to his chest there.
Are you talking? Let's see. Which one of that? Who's that?
Jerry Nadler.
Oh, Jerry Nadler. Yeah.
All these people in the Democratic Party have ruined this country, and the tree huggers that don't want drilling of oil in our lands and everything else. They're responsible for what has happened right now in Ukraine. These people should be held accountable come November.
Okay. Now,
they're the ones that have the blood on their hands right now with what's going on. And they put this country and the world into a situation where you've got a nut person, a nutcase like Adolf Hitler, talking about pushing that button.
Yeah.
I mean, whether he's, you know, fooling around or whatever. This guy is real, and he has to be taken out.
Yeah.
And these people in our country, our own people, the Democrats, have put this country into a situation. And the world. They've changed the situation.
It is. It's absolutely a powder keg right now. I want to switch gears real quickly. Tomorrow night, because I've got you both, tomorrow night, Biden is going to try to make a State of the Union speech. And what's he going to say? Let me start with you, Angelo. What is he going to say, seriously, about his performance the past year?
Well, he's going to say he's done a great job. He's going to say he's eradicated, COVID-19. You don't even hear about it anymore, do you?
Not much. It's been really on the back burner.
Coming off now and everything like that. He's going to say he kept us out of a war. He's keeping us out of a war, right? All this stuff. He was successful in getting us out of Afghanistan. He's going to say all the pluses that he says he has done, mm-hmm. which we know he hasn't.
Mm-hmm. So, Andrew, will you be taking copious notes while, Mr. Energetic Biden delivers his State of the Union?
You know, Paul, I think that's going to be one of the best comedy shows of the season. Okay, there's going to be a lot of laughs.
Yes.
A lot of jokes we'll be able to make up about him.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to send Nancy Pelosi a defense to tear up behind him.
Not his State of the Union speech. Here's what I want.
It depends.
I want the camera to pan the audience, and I want to be able to count the number of people whose heads are bobbing and nodding off, because I think that would be important.
Well, you got Azinger. I'm sure he was invited. And you got, what's her name there? Both turncoats.
You're talking about as guests?
Liz Cheney.
Oh, Liz Cheney. Here. Yeah.
And some of these people that are anti-Trump.
Rhinos, you mean.
So now are going to be ashamed to even be there.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know what they have done.
Well, you know, the last presidential address we had with Trump, the women all wore white. Do you remember?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Democrat women.
That's right.
Tomorrow?
Well, I think all the Democrat women ought to wear red now for the blood they have on their hands.
Oh, wow.
What's going on in this country?
Yeah. You mean in the
Democrats
what happens.
Do have blood on their hands right now. Every one of them that have voted and made the last 5 years in our country against Trump and all this Russian collusion, these people now have blood on their hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that feel exactly like you guys feel right now. Hey, it's always a pleasure to have both of you on every Monday.
Send me over there. I'll go take them out.
Ah, there you go. Thanks so much, guys. It's been a pleasure, and we'll talk again soon.
Have a good day.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There they go, the Brothers Ceresi. Take a quick break. When we come back, among other things, we're going to talk a little bit about the State of the Union speech and whether or not Joe Biden is going to wow the crowd.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Russo's New York Style Pizza. We have some exciting news. Every Thursday at 8 p.m., we have open mic night for comics. Come out and try your comedy and enjoy some amazing food. Now, one of the winners will get $50 cash from the owner. And the address is 2233 Gulf to Bay Boulevard in Clearwater between Belcher and Gulf to Bay Boulevard in the Public Shopping Center. We'll see you there at Russo's New York Style Pizza every Thursday. Come a little early and sign up if you'd like to try open mic night at 7:30 p.m.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. Freedom Works, by the way, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, right here on the great Tantalk Radio Network. That's when we do our show. But Big Ed puts all our shows on podcast, so you can listen to us anytime. You might have missed some pearls of wisdom, even listening live to us. You get to go back and listen to the whole show or any of the shows. Go to OurFreedomWorks.com, O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com, and click on the podcast button. Well, while all of this is going on in the Ukraine, here's North Korea. Did you know that they fired a mid-range ballistic missile yesterday? I mean, all of a sudden, we got China threatening Taiwan. We got North Korea tossing missiles again. Obviously, we got the Ukraine situation. We got Iran, and they're working towards a nuclear capacity. Things are not going well. I don't know what the hell Biden is going to say positive on his. Are you going to watch any of that speech tomorrow night, Ed?
You know, I'll try. I don't know how long it'll last, but you know,
yeah,
it depends if he says anything. You know. With any substance to it, or if he just,
well, you know, you're not going to get much of that.
I don't know what he's going to take credit for the virus going down. We'll probably hear that 3 or 4 times.
I would,
you know,
yeah.
And he's also he's the building infrastructure. The economy.
Yeah. He'll talk about the infrastructure.
He'll talk about the stock market.
Stock market's not looking that good right
now.
Well,
that's just today, but
overall,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well. Some GOP lawmakers have been making predictions on what Biden's State of the Union address will be like. Here's Marsha Blackburn, who I like, by the way, that's a Republican senator from Tennessee. She said, I think they're probably torn up the draft they were going to use in the State of the Union speech because of what's going on right now. And they're going to need to buckle down and do some hard work on these foreign policy issues. I would think so. Here's Ronnie Jackson. He's also from Tennessee. He expects Biden to pivot to his domestic agenda. He says, I don't know what he was planning to talk about initially, but he's obviously going to have to focus a lot on what's going on the world stage. And I doubt that he'll focus on the fact that the incompetence in his own White House has led us to where we are right now. I mean, I almost feel sorry for him a little bit.
I don't.
But not that much,
No. You
know, not that much. He keeps saying, well, you know, what a great job he's doing. I wish he would be just a little bit more honest.
That's what it says on the prompter. Come on.
That's exactly right.
It's got to be true, just like if it's on the internet.
I just pray that the electricity stops and the prompter stops and goes dark. I just want to see how he would react. They probably have to come out and lead him away from the podium, right? Mm. All right. It is time for our top 10. These are, I think we got a pretty good one, and I think it's very timely. These are the top 10 world's strongest militaries, and you're going to be surprised at some of these countries. We're going to show you, tell you what their personnel numbers are, the number of tanks in their aircraft, all right? Here we go. Top 10 world's strongest militaries. Number 10. Turkey is number 10. They have personnel of about 411,000. They've got about 3,800 tanks, and they've got a little over 1,000 aircraft. By the way, they also have 13 subs floating around out there, all right? Number 9.
Would those subs have mayo on them?
God.
Turkey and mayo.
I got it. A lot of bacon grease.
Number nine.
Bacon grease and the sub can go faster than the Lord. All right. Number nine is the United Kingdom. Yeah. United Kingdom. They've got 147,000 personnel. They got 400 plus tanks, and they've got over 900 aircraft. Number eight. Italy, 320,000 tanks, 760 airplanes, 6 subs floating around the Adriatic, I guess. Number 7.
Now, Italy's got to have a good sub.
Better Italian than subs are
better
the
than,
best.
Better than Turkey.
I think you're right. Is there a country called ham? Because I've always liked ham subs. No, there isn't. All right. Number 7 is South Korea, and they need it.
Yeah.
They've got 624,000 personnel. Wow. 2,400 tanks, 1,400 airplanes. Okay? I don't think they want to fly over the DMZ, but they're going to be flying close to it. Number 6, France.
Mm-hmm.
France, 203,000 tanks, 423 airplanes. About 1,300 sub aircraft. Have you ever had a French sub? They got 10 of them.
Mm.
10 French subs. Okay. Number 5. India is number 5. By the way, you know they're considered the world's largest democracy. 1,325,000 tanks. Almost 1,900 aircraft. I'm sorry. I misspoke. 1,325,000 personnel, 6,500 tanks, and almost 2,000 airplanes.
They pretty much mind their own business.
You know, they've been keeping out of it.
Yeah.
They've been keeping their turbines clean.
Yeah.
All right. Number 4, Japan. Japan's got 247,000 military personnel, 678 tanks, 1,600 airplanes. Number 3, China is third. China has 2.3 million personnel, okay? They've got 9,000 plus tanks. They have 2,900 airplanes. Number 2, Russia. Okay, 766,000 people, 15,000 tanks, and 3,400 airplanes. Number 1 is USA, 1,400,000 personnel, about 9,000 tanks, and about 14,000 airplanes.
Yeah, I thought North Korea would have creeped into that list somewhere.
They didn't.
Yeah.
Thank God they didn't, all right? Thanks so much. We're going to be back on Wednesday. Remember, freedom works.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez, a rare emergency.